Ladies and gentlemen, storytellers of all ages, lend your ears to co-hosts Brad and Philip as we delve into the Marketing Your Attraction podcast.
Welcome to episode 17 of Marketing Your Attraction. I'm Philip and I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Brad. Brad, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, Philip. I'm glad to be back. We have another great episode, or we hope it'll be a great episode. Since this is the intro, I guess I shouldn't get ahead of myself, right?
It will be a great episode. It's one of those FAQ episodes. When I go around, do conferences or really anything involving social media at all, one of the most common questions, probably the most common question, is what platforms should I be on and what should I be doing? That's what we're going to tackle today after a little bit of news.
Yeah, let's jump into the news. I think the biggest news this week, probably for the entire marketing industry and definitely for social media, as you mentioned, was Instagram announced their new Instagram TV app/feature. And what Instagram TV is it's pulling in long form video content into the Instagram experience. So before Instagram TV, all Instagram videos were limited to only 60 seconds. And I think Instagram's seen the incredible success of YouTube and all of the different experiments that Facebook, which is owned by Instagram, has been trying with their different longer form content. And it was a natural extension for Instagram to get into the game. And so what Instagram TV is it's allowing creators to have these longer form shows and is pulling them into the Instagram experience. It will actually come up in the regular Instagram app, but there's also an Instagram TV app that almost acts like a cable TV type package, but completely free for right now. So when you open that Instagram TV app, it actually just starts streaming content to you, just like a TV would. And you can go through different creators' channels and you can see all sorts of videos ranging from 5 minutes to 15 minutes to I think even like an hour or two. So Instagram is really doubling down on pulling what's been kind of YouTube's bread and butter for the last, 10 years with all of these YouTube celebrities and really trying to pull them onto the Instagram platform and pulling all their fans with them. And they announced it this week because of VidCon was the big video creators conference that was taking place in Anaheim, California. And so that's kind of Instagram TV. The article that I mentioned in the show notes talks about how Instagram TV is pulling us ever closer to a future full of tall videos. So instead of your usual 16 by 9 aspect, widescreen aspect videos that you're used to on YouTube and movies and television, Instagram is really encouraging people with Instagram TV to do the vertical videos, that full frame video. So Popular Science had an interesting article talking about this, and it's just another reminder to all of us attractions creators out there, all of us marketers out there, that we have to be thinking about vertical video, because more and more that's what's working the best on different platforms. And for something like Instagram TV, they are only accepting vertical video, and that's really what the experience is designed around. What did you think about this announcement, Philip?
I think it's pretty par for the course. I mean, we've known that Facebook has been combating YouTube for a while, and their emphasis on video and just live and just moving creators over, and their like video platform and everything is a it's been happening for a while. So not again one of those things, like not at all surprised that that like the social games have changed once again, and it's just one of those things.
I kind of wish
producing your content just have to adjust a little bit if you're playing the Instagram game.
Yeah, I think as most marketers, I know I definitely wish there was just one platform out there. It would make our lives a lot easier. And I know I definitely struggle with trying to make both vertical and horizontal video and all the different aspect ratios and all the best practices. Just another thing to have to keep think of, that, you know, to keep track of as you're producing all of this content. But hopefully Instagram will be able to bring in, you know, new audiences. And we'll talk about this a little bit later as we get into our main topic, but Instagram just continues to grow and grow and grow. So it is great that they're now having a little bit more flexibility and you're not limited to just those 60 seconds. I did want to mention before we wrap up this story in the New York Times article that we'll link to about the Instagram TV announcement. One of the content creators had this great quote in there. He said, "Everyone spends time on Instagram. Every single person is always on Instagram. When you go to YouTube, you're actively looking for something. Instagram, you're waiting in line and it's like, let me go just go waste some time on Instagram." Mm-hmm. That's a great example of how Instagram is kind of positioned in the social world and how they're taking that long form content in sort of a different direction. So you know, YouTube's bread and butter has really been tutorials and yes, they have a lot of content creators that you can subscribe to, but Instagram is all about personalities and all about just trying to have more and more content for that, that scrolling audience to consume throughout their day. So moving on from Instagram TV, we had another quick news story. This one is about how the tours and activities sector is still facing challenges of moving bookings online. This is from a really great industry site called skift.com. That's skift.com. And we'll put the link in the show notes. And this article has talked about how so many bookings for a lot of tours and activities are still happening in person. I know I see this all the time when I go to different tourist attraction cities like like a New York or San Francisco or even here in Los Angeles. You see all of the tour operators on their little in their little booths, and they're just selling tickets right then and there as people are walking down the boulevard, or they're selling tickets in the hotels. And a lot of these bookings are sort of the last part of the travel experience that are not completely dominated by online services. And so this article kind of talks about some of those challenges of what's causing these bookings to not be moved online. Some of the players in that space that are trying to make sure that everything gets booked in advance. And Airbnb is getting into this industry a lot more because the article mentions that although, you're booking your hotel online, the vast majority of your travel dollars are spent on these different tours and activities. And so there's a lot of players in the space that want to be able to get an extra dollar out of that. So it'll be interesting to see if there is a Ticketmaster type tour and activity company that eventually emerges, because right now it's very fragmented. And as the article mentions, primarily still happening offline.
It's just another one of those interesting games that we all play with the attention and the way that the decisions are made in the tourism process. I think it'll be very interesting for us to understand that. But a lot of it goes back to what we've been talking about with owning home, not really building on rented land type of a process. I don't know. This has been a battle that's been going on for quite a while too. Just owning all the different levels of decision in the process. I remember sitting on a talk at an event last year by I think it was Live Nation, who they're an events promoter, but they also operate a lot of their own venues, and then they also have Ticketmaster as a subsidiary. So it was very interesting to hear their market, one of their marketing directors kind of talk about the owning all of these different channels, where it's like they own the venue and they own the contract with the performer. They're the ones booking the people, and they own the venue, they represent, they promote the events, and they represent the people, and they own the venue, and they also own the ticket distribution You know, so you're not going through a separate person. It's them at every possible juncture.
Yeah, a good position to be in if you're Live Nation. Not necessarily a good position to be in if you're the venue or a band or an act that
yes
is performing at this. And that's a great point, because that's what this article talks about, is there's a lot of resistance to these small tour operators wanting to move online because they're not used to doing commissions. They're used to just dealing with that simple transaction of, oh, hey, a guest wants to do, you know, my sightseeing tour to go see the Hollywood celebrity houses, and they give me money and then I give them a ticket. Mm-hmm. And that's it. You know, there's no complication. There's no having to have, you know, a whole booking engine to make sure you're not triple booking different activities and tours and different timed bookings. And it gets to be really complex when you really think about how all those systems work on the back end. And so you have these small businesses that have a great thing going for them. Why would they want to disrupt that? But I'm sure that the world will eventually have them going digital as well. And just another thing to look out for. Hopefully there won't be just one, you know, giant 800-pound gorilla like a Ticketmaster or an Amazon coming in and dominating the space, because I think fragmentation's important. Otherwise, you're sort of at the mercy of just a couple of companies, which is what the hotel industry is really at right now with Booking.com and I believe Expedia is the other one. Those are the two big hotel bookers. And if you're a hotel, you almost have to be at the mercy of giving them commissions, because that's where consumers are now trained to go.
I don't know. We'll have to see. I definitely think that obviously that's what we want, but I think that that's not what they want.
No, it's yeah. I think long term it's probably a battle that the smaller attractions won't win. But who knows? So far they've held out for this long, so we'll see. We'll see what the future holds. So that sort of rounds up our quick takes and our news this week. Let's dive into our main topic, Phil.
The main topic this week is, what is the difference between the different platforms, and which platform should you be using? I'm curious to get Brad's take, because I'm going to give the take. It's never, my take is never popular when I go and teach on it. And my take, you know, generally is, it depends on your attraction. and it depends, on your market and your customer base, and you know, it basically, it depends on your marketing plan. And nobody likes that answer ever that I give. I think it's because you want to start from. I've noticed the tendency of a lot of attractions to see stuff like Instagram TV that we just told you about, and then run and like want to make a campaign, you know, to play with Instagram TV. And generally, you know, my answer is always like, you start from your marketing plan, which should have your why in it, and then you use these things as tools that facilitate that, you know, in a way you can measure. Kind of resist the urge to like shiny object it every time a social platform like adds a new trick, you know, that you can try for. There are a few things I usually start off that on. You know, we already covered the rented land thing, but I also like to remind people of the error margin that exists online. You know, that your metrics are not really super accurate, even though everyone thinks they're accurate. I also like to remind people that it's all pay to play. All of it is. You know, you're not going to get these like viral. You can't count on virality. You know, you can't count on just doing a thing and, you know, kind of quote unquote seeing, you know, all those types of things. You know, you really have to approach it from your, whatever campaign you do, from your tying it back to what overall objectives you're trying to achieve, kind of from a macro stance, and figuring out if that's really the best way to achieve them. Then the whole, I always also remind everyone that each platform is not created equal. Just because I always I hear a lot about Facebook like not being like the cool place to be. It's like quote unquote like it's not cool. That's for older people. When in reality, you know, each platform really does have an entirely different ecosystem, but even even putting that all aside, you know, Facebook still dwarfs everybody else by its sheer like size and magnitude of influence on our lives. So it's still, you know, kind of the place everyone meets at, and then everyone diverges for separate interests and separate purposes in other places. But I'm really curious to hear Brad's take on it and what your team does.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely 100% agree with you. There's not an easy answer. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast is it's a question I get quite a bit, both from industry professionals who want to know what platforms they should be using, to like friends who are just getting into social, and whether it's professional or business. I think there's always that question of like, okay, there's all these different networks. Where do I start? And I would say you should start on all of them, at least initially. Just reserve your name. It's very important for search engine optimization value in a lot of ways that you at least set up your page, your profile on each of these social media platforms. And you know, that's all your primary ones, your YouTube, your Snapchat, your Instagram, your Facebook, your Twitter, your Pinterest, maybe your Yelp, your Google My Business. Those last two are not necessarily social media, but some of your most important platforms from a search engine optimization perspective are probably Yelp, and definitely Google My Business and Facebook. So you want to make sure you at least set up a good profile page. You reserve your names, your attractions. Business name, you have your right address on there, you have your website on there. Hopefully you have a consistent logo and profile images for all those platforms. That's sort of your first step. You want to at least get the ground running. And then, you know, going past that, I think, you know, for best practices for a attraction that is focused on families and possibly, you know, older adults, Facebook's still going to be your bread and butter, with Instagram just kind of right behind it. For an attraction that is aiming for much younger adults or even like teenagers, that's going to be Snapchat and Instagram. Snapchat, I'm still not a huge fan of because the metrics are not fantastic. So it's hard to learn a lot from what you're doing on that platform in particular. Twitter, I love Twitter personally. I think there's some great communities on there, but I think for the most part, it's a platform that is just not really for consumer engagement for a lot of brands. Yeah, it's a good support platform for bigger attractions. Of course, there's a lot of conversation going on there about news and politics, but I think for most small and big attractions, Twitter just is not a place to spend a ton of time on. I know for Knott's Berry Farm in particular, Facebook is incredibly important for us. We have a great community there, and we have you know, really a family focus on our audience. So there's a lot of moms, a lot of dads, a lot of grandmas, grandpas, aunts and uncles who are always sharing different photos of themselves at the park and are very, very engaged on Facebook. And then close behind is Instagram, which is a younger audience, but that's a platform that's still growing, not as big as Facebook yet, but is getting there. And I think for Scary Farm, where we're really targeting teenagers and very young adults, we see a lot more engagement on Scary Farm and a lot more engagement on our Scary Farm Snapchat account than we do on our Berry Farm Snapchat account, because we're targeting a different audience. So that's sort of how I think about social media. A lot of it too is, and we've talked about this in previous episodes and we'll probably cover it in future ones too, is social is just one small piece of your marketing plan. And I feel like it's the piece that a lot of people focus on the most, because it's easy. It's something that a lot of people are already attuned to. They use social media in their personal life, and so when they start using it on business, like, they understand it. But there's just so much garbage out there with social media, from, you know, fake followers to fake engagement. It's really tough to build an honest to goodness community if you don't have a bigger marketing plan and a really well-established attraction. So just make sure that as you're thinking about social media, as Philip said, it's just one part of that plan. But if you're just getting into social media, I'll reiterate what I just said a few minutes ago, that you really should set up your profile on all the accounts, get that search engine optimization going, start building fans. So then that way they can, you know, if when people are searching for your traction on Facebook or Instagram, they're searching it by name, or they want to tag you in a photo they're taking at that attraction, at least you'll be able to have that profile set up. Even if you don't necessarily, you know, keep using all those different platforms, at least set them up. Is that something you would agree with, Philip? I know sometimes people disagree with setting up an account and kind of keeping it dormant, but I do really feel like that's important to have a presence on most of these platforms, even if it's not a very active presence.
I generally tell everyone don't try everything at once. I think that's generally terrible idea, because it's just the thing I get most often is everyone is like, they come to my classes and they're like, oh, well, I'm like, why are you here? And like, well, everyone's told me I have to be on Instagram. And I'm like, that might be the worst reason to be in this class. There's probably a more worse, but that's, you know, that's really bad. Like everybody, as in like other employees or like other random people, are telling them they have to do this thing, but there's no marketing plan. There's no defined purpose of what they're specifically trying to do with that platform. There's just none of these things. And so that's why I'm like, generally I'm like, pick one or two platforms and then design some sort of like test campaigns around it and figure out what metrics you actually care about. And then use that as a measure for success. But yeah. I don't like disagree with like kind of holding things in place, and especially some of the things that you mentioned on here, which I wrote down for the show notes for everyone listening, is like, basically you're wanting to make sure that your keywords and your logo and like name spelled the same way. Like all these things are actually pretty important. Like, like just little things like Knott's Berry Farm. Like it would be really annoying if like that spelling was taken by somebody else and you had to like fight for it. Or if you spelled it in a different way, like the Knott's Berry Farm, which is a thing people do all the time, is like whether or not they put stuff in front of their name or they spell it a different way. Or, you know, I've seen a lot of people like abbreviate their brands in some social accounts, but not abbreviate them in others. Where people are like, oh, it's on Facebook, so I should spell out everything. But then if it's like something that's less like Snapchat, they want to like make it seem more cool, so they like abbreviate it.
Yeah, just to clarify, I'm definitely not saying to use all of them, just to set them up. And then whether you use them or not going forward, at least you have them set up and you have that name reserved. And if people are looking for your address or something on Facebook, at least they can find it, whether you're active or not on Facebook. But to your point, yeah, you should not try to run, you know, five or six social accounts unless you have a pretty sizable team that is able to make that part of their focus. But at least set them up so you have those names reserved. And as you mentioned, make sure you set them up consistently too.
I'm going to add a few things in here. You know, I think I really like Brad's outline of them. For Twitter, Twitter is also useful for reporters and for professionals. You know, it's like... your classic news reporters still seem to like Twitter for some reason. Probably because hashtags are easier. Like news is easier to track via Twitter because it's open. So that's actually a pretty good place to do some influencer searching and to kind of track some hashtags and track some information. And also to kind of see if you can tap into some reporters and professionals there. Also, a lot of people use it for customer service. That's again why I'm like going back to the whole like, what is the purpose of some of your channels? Some of these bleed into different purposes. Like, you know, Facebook is also a customer service play. you know, and so is Twitter is a very popular customer service play. You know, if that's the only other thing is, I'm like, once you set it up, you know, once you set up your Twitter, if someone tweets an issue with your park to you, they're going to expect an answer in under a few hours. So, you know, there's that kind of a pit you fall in, and understanding that people, you know, all social media is two-way communication, even if you intend to only use it for like a campaign things. So just understanding
that is a good point. Cause at least on Facebook, you can turn off private messaging, but yeah, on Twitter, that's almost sort of built into the platform.
Yes.
How people operate.
And, then LinkedIn too, is mainly B2B. I think that's everyone, it's kind of settled into the B2B thing, but it's another place to find, influencers, on LinkedIn, and engage with them there. And also business development, you know, so there's people that publish exclusively on LinkedIn, sort of like as a replacement for a blog platform. So, you know, that it's a good place to kind of, so it's just, you have to look at these and figure out like, you know, what is your play? You know, is your play with Twitter going to be purely customer service and releasing of press releases and engaging, you know, high end press? And is your play with LinkedIn going to be like potentially recruiting, where you're on there and you're like recruiting people, you're also recruiting for business development, like partnering with other businesses, and then you're recruiting for potentially people that publish on that platform, like you know, business bloggers or like mom bloggers or something that do pulse reports. You know, is that what you're doing? You know, there's so many angles for these. I put also some other notes here on what basically helping you think about what you're trying to get from the platform. I find this to be a really useful tool as well. You know, I put down a few things here, like awareness. So basically when you can either do this campaign based or you can do this platform based. And Facebook does this kind of help, makes you do this. but some of the other platforms don't. So just as a way to keep track of it. So you can either do it by campaign or do it by platform, but you need to have your kind of like defined purpose, which will help you figure out whether or not you should be on the platform is where this is going. And a few of the basic purposes I put here, there's awareness. You know, are you, is just a purely awareness play? Is it an engagement play? You know, like, are you having trouble engaging, you know, the teenagers and the younger audience, and you need them to be engaged for some campaign you're doing? So are you going to do a Snapchat engagement campaign, you know, for that piece of audience that you're having trouble getting in through other means? Is it an authority campaign? So that would be potentially like, you know, authority through LinkedIn or Twitter. Is it a leads play? You know, are you specifically using a platform like Facebook specifically because you're trying to get leads on people that are interested? Or is it a pure sales play? You know, are you sending direct retargeting for repurchase stuff on these platforms? And then there's customer service play as well, or biz development play, or press play. So yeah. So I would recommend asking what specifically are you trying to get from the platform you're using, and then who are you specifically trying to gauge on it, which will help kind of clear up why you should be using some of the platforms or not. And then I also put a list in here of the top 8 reasons why people use social media. Should be a good amount for everyone to think on, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, like we said, this is sort of your social media, you know, starter kit, and hopefully this has sparked some ideas. And if you have an idea for the show or want to learn more about a specific part of social media, have a question for us, go to marketingyourattraction.com, put your email into the website, you'll receive an email from us, and then you'll have our contact information. We'd love to hear your ideas. We'd love to know if you want us to dive more into social media. If you have anything you disagree with that we covered on the show that, you know, maybe you think this platform has worked better for you with this different age demographic that maybe we didn't cover. Like, we'd love to hear your perspectives on anything we've covered on the show. And before we wrap up, I know the Leadership Symposium, Philip, that you're hosting is only, what, 3 or 4 weeks away?
Oh, gosh, don't remind me. Yeah, it's getting pretty close. So join us for a wonderful, intense day of learning, a day focusing on first impressions and why we make the memories that we make at attractions and how we can make those memories stronger for our guests.
Yeah, it'll be a really good time. It's going to be held in Long Beach, California at the Queen Mary. So I'm looking forward to attending that with Philip and hopefully meeting a few of our podcast audience listeners out there. Anything else you wanted to add, Philip, before we wrap up episode 17?
I think that's a perfect wrap.
Awesome. We'll talk to all of you next week. Have a great week.